As Oklahoma Baptists, we have no greater opportunity for evangelism than we have on our university campuses. If we neglect evangelizing our college campuses, we will lose our nation, and we will miss the key layman in America. Now, we have two primary areas of concern when we think of our college students. One is a Baptist student who's gone away to college. The other is a non-Christian student. And the non-Christian student on our campuses are to a great degree neglected. And we'll have something to say about them later. But there are two basic ways in which we try to minister to our Baptist students apart from what we do just through our local churches. One way is through Oklahoma Baptist University. Another is through the 26 Baptist Student Unions scattered across the state. We're concerned, naturally, we're interested in Oklahoma Baptist University because this is where so many of our pastors are trained. The pastors, this may come somewhat as a shock to you, but there is something worse than a church without a pastor, and that's a church without laymen. And the laymen basically are not coming from Oklahoma Baptist University. They're coming from our state campuses. And unless we evangelize our state campuses, in a few years, our churches will be in bad, bad shape. You realize what we're facing on our state campuses? Our campuses are flooded with masses of students, many of them raised outside of evangelical churches. For example, at the University of Oklahoma, as we began to go into a certain area to witness in the dorms, I kept running into students in a way that I could not believe, from New York and New Jersey. And one night in conversation with one of the students, I said, "I can't believe it. It seems like most of the students that I'm witnessing to on the campus are from the north." And so he said, "Well, do you know the reason for this?" And he told me some statistics about the number of students from up north, and so I went to see the registrar. You know the state that has the most students at the University of Oklahoma? Well, Oklahoma has more students there than any other state. Number two is Texas. State number three is New York. State number four is New Jersey. I'm talking about Oklahoma University. And you know what this means? Now, we have quite a few students from Texas and Oklahoma that do not know Jesus Christ. But these students, basically, from New York and New Jersey that we're talking to, are just as pagan as if you'd have rounded them up out of the heart of Africa. Now, they're pagan. They're American pagans. But nevertheless, they're pagan. You know, we have 943 more students at Oklahoma University than we had this time 1 year ago. And then, you know, the non-Christian is being sadly neglected. They stay away from our revivals and our Sunday schools in droves. I believe there is a way to reach a college student. I believe one of the great answers to reaching the non-Christian college student is a special kind of Christian student. Now, I didn't just say Baptist student. I mean a special kind of a Christian student. It seemed natural that one of the great jobs of the Baptist Student Union director should be to band together those Baptist students that come to our campuses out of the Baptist churches across Oklahoma. And then out of this group being a great evangelizing force on the campus. But it is not that simple. I don't know very many Baptist Student Unions that have a great thrust in the area of evangelism. Before we become too critical of them, we better remember where we get our products. I remember someone asked Cal Guy one day, "Well, Cal, how are things at the seminary?" He said, "About as well as could be expected, realizing that the students come from Baptist churches." I'm not trying to be critical at this point, nor cute. But so many of these students spent 17 years in Baptist churches before we ever see them. Average Baptist freshman who arrives on our campus is ill prepared to live in a college community, much less be a dynamic witness there. When he arrives on campus, he certainly doesn't arrive thanking God for the new opportunities he has to help fulfill the Great Commission. Evangelism is the furthest thing from his mind when he arrives at our campus. And Sunday, he's in your Baptist church. On Monday, he's at the University of Oklahoma, and evangelism is the furthest thing from his mind. Now, he may be a little bit concerned with keeping the faith he has, but he certainly isn't very concerned about passing it on to someone else. Now, why is it that we rarely, rarely, if ever, receive a Baptist student who is a real dynamic witness when he arrives on our campus? Many have been raised in Baptist churches. They made decisions when they were 9 and 10 and 11 years of age. If that student was saved when he was 10, before he arrives on our campus, he's at least 17. He spent 7 years as a Christian in a Baptist church. 7 years is a long time. They were saved, many of them, when they were 9 and 10, and they've made almost yearly rededications at Falls Creek every year since. But let me tell you what I mean. One night I went into the dorms to witness. It was the first day of classes on our campus. I picked up the card of a Baptist freshman. I knocked on his door. This was his first day on campus after his first full day of classes. I knocked on the door and someone yelled, "Come in." And I walked in. And there around the bed were a group of students. And on the bed were several dollars, and a poker game was underway. Well, I'm not a man of great discernment, but it was pretty obvious to me that this was probably not the time for deep spiritual conversation. But I felt like it was a great time to shake someone up and maybe make someone think and maybe have a little fun to boot. And so I announced in loud terms, I said, "My name is Max Barnett. I'm the Baptist student director at Oklahoma University." And a boy down at the end of the bed went, "Oh." I knew immediately who was the Baptist. I've visited that boy 6 times in 6 weeks, and he's not set foot in a church in Norman since. That boy was raised in a Baptist church in Oklahoma. I found out through later visits his roommate is from Connecticut and not a Christian. And the only way we'll ever win that roommate to Jesus Christ is to go around that Baptist. If you think the person I'm talking about is a rare exception, you're almost as much out of touch as some college students think Baptist preachers are. I'm concerned about the Baptist kids we're raising. On Oklahoma University campus, we have at least 2,500, and on any given Sunday in Norman, we will not, as a result of all of our Baptist churches, have 250 of them in church. I'm aware that some of them with modern transportation go home, but I'm also aware of the fact most of them don't go anyplace. Now, why are some of our Baptist students so ill-prepared to be a part of God's redemptive plan on the university campus? I think there are several reasons. I want to mention some of them. One is that personal evangelism was never that important to his church leaders, including his pastor. Many a pastor has never spent so much as 1 hour talking with his young people about personal evangelism in his world. Apart from occasional training union lesson or occasional soul-winning clinic we might have in our church, those young people never get any consistent help in the area of personal evangelism. Never one time in his entire life has anyone ever sat down with him and shared with him how he could share his personal testimony in such a way it would communicate with one of his buddies who's not a Christian at school. I think there's another reason why they're not much witnesses when they get to the campus. One is that the Baptist faith in which he's raised is not very challenging to him. You know, we really don't expect too much of our young people. Now, we don't expect them to go around breaking out lights and breaking into stores, but we don't really expect them to be dynamic witnesses in their high schools either. That student comes to church and he hears preaching week by week, and really, just to be honest, he can't see a great deal of results of it. He knows that most of the adults in his church are no different than they were 100 sermons ago. He knows Dad's a deacon, and he also knows his dad is not a dynamic witness on his job. Never one time in his life has he ever knelt with his dad and heard him pray for a lost man on a job where his dad worked. I'll tell you another reason they're not too excited about evangelism when they come. This student is not blind. He sees the racial revolution that going on about him. He's raised in a church where he knows it's fine for the Negro man to be the janitor, but Sunday morning at 11 o'clock when the lily white crowd meets to worship God, that man better not be there. Now, there are some rare exceptions to that. Or some of us, and as a student knows, the last school in America to be integrated will be the Sunday school. It'll take a more aggressive... Or I know some of us have... You know, we've voted to open our doors, but so what? It'll take a more aggressive program of evangelism among these cultural groups and these racial groups than just voting to open our doors. How under God's heaven did we get the people we now have in Baptist churches? We didn't meet at the church and vote to receive them. If they came, we went after them. We're going to reach racial groups. And this student knows that on Thursday night church visitation, although the church has voted to open the doors, no one goes to a certain section of town. Now I've just tried briefly to describe something of the condition and some of the thinking of Baptist students. Now what can we do to help these young people? I think there's one thing we can do, and that is we can work together. Now, Pastor, let me assure you this. The dearest friend you have in this earth when it comes to a likeness of concern for the college students from your church is a Baptist student director. At a time in his life when the student needs a church more than he's ever needed it in his life, he has the least contact with it. When he is facing questions he's never faced before and that he did not ever dream that his pastor had ever even thought about it. He gets on a college campus and he has so little contact with the church, if there's ever a time in which he needs the church, it's now, and that's when he has the least contact with it. Pastor, if there's ever a time you ought to express your concern and show your concern toward your young people, it is when they're away in college. You could help your young people a great deal by just doing a simple matter like, number one, letting us know when your young people are coming to church or coming away from your church to the college campus. You know, year after year, we write letters to Baptist pastors asking for lists of Baptists who are coming to our campus. And year after year, most of them go unanswered. Do you know now that before we can gain any kind of information from the university, it's about 3 to 4 weeks before we can possibly find those students? And that's why we try to go out in the dorm just meeting any and every one we can. But it's at least 3 weeks now before we can get the name of any Baptist student on that campus. And unless we can get the name from you, we'll probably not be able to get to them. You could help us a great deal at this point. Unless when your students come away, as one student came to me at the Youth Evangelism Conference, senior in one of the schools, a junior senior, and said, "What is BSU?" And I could not help but think his pastor had done him a great injustice. Let me suggest you do one other thing. Check up on your students who are away in college. I remember when the youth director from First Baptist Church in Muskogee came to our campus. He told his church he would be gone for about 2 weeks. He wanted some money to take some students out to eat. He was going to the campuses where his students were. And he came to our campus. The next Sunday, we had 2 students join First Baptist Church from his church. So many pastors don't know at all where their students are in church or not. Let me encourage you to have special emphases on evangelism with your young people. Dr. Pennington mentioned last month, just the conference that was held last month for youth evangelism, You know what a blessing this meeting is meant to you. Think what something of this same nature could mean to young people where they were talking about being witnesses in their school. It was the thinking of Dr. Pennington and Clyde Clayton and others that this youth evangelism conference could do a great deal to help involve the young people in witnessing through their own home churches in the Crusade of the Americas. That was undoubtedly one of the finest youth meetings I've attended in this state. I hope this will be an annual meeting. And I'd suggest that if we are able to do this again, that you go all out to get your young people there. Let me suggest that you invite students from your nearby BSU or from any BSU to come and try to help the young people in the area of evangelism through retreats and this type of thing. On many of our campuses, we have some dynamic witnesses. They can speak the language of the kids, and they can be great, help them a great deal in witnessing to their friends. One of the last things I want to mention and spend my time on. You see, Pastor, in order to help your young people in the area of evangelism, you've got to realize basically what the problem in evangelism is. And I believe Jesus summarized it when he said in Matthew 12:34, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Now you see, evangelism, first of all, is a heart problem. You've got to deal with the heart. If you want something to come out the mouth, something has to be in the heart. You've got to build something into their lives. They need to come to the campus already having established a consistent devotional life. That's a rare thing to find among a freshman. We've got to help them in areas of their life. Let me just share with you briefly some of the things that we're trying to do. When I came to the University of Oklahoma 2 years ago, I had basically, well, several objectives. But I'd been challenged from Colossians 1:28-29 in the Phillips translation, where Paul said this: "So naturally we proclaim Christ. We warn everyone we meet. We teach everyone we can all that we know about Jesus Christ, so that if it is possible, we can bring every man up to his full maturity in Christ. That is what I am working at all the time with all the strength God gives me." And one thing I'd already learned as a result of having spent a lifetime in a Baptist church, that people do not learn to witness just by preaching on witnessing. If that were true, we would have evangelizing congregations in a tremendous way. But this is not true. And so I wanted to do basically one or two things. I knew that in order for some of the Baptist young people to catch any vision for evangelism, they're going to have to see it done. And so I came praying that God would, as well as letting me work with Baptist students, would help me to reach out in evangelism and win some people that are just as lost as they could be, begin to build into their lives in such that they could witness and train others, so that some of the Baptist students could see what it's all about. And so I began to pray to this end. I came 2 years ago this week. I began to pray, and I began to go out to witness. One day, through a contact with a Negro student who's on a gymnastics team, this boy became a Christian. In talking with him, I said, "Mike, what's your religious background?" He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, I mean, what church did you go to?" And he said, "Well, I don't go to any church." I said, "Well, Mike, what about your parents? What church do they go to?" And he said, "Well, they don't go to church." I said, "Mike, let me ask you this. If they ever did go to church, which one would they go to?" And he said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Well, I remember one time in my life when I was a little boy that Mom and Dad took me to one church one Sunday. I didn't like it. I never went back." So that day I had the privilege of talking to that boy, and he invited Christ to come into his life. He had problems galore. I took him to First Baptist Church on Sunday, and he made his public profession of faith, and Preacher Hallett wrote him a letter about being baptized. The next week he got that letter, and he came over to the office, and he said, "Mr. Barnett, what is it to be baptized?" I said, "Mike," so I sat down with the Bible and spent about an hour, and I explained to him what it meant, and the picture of our of Jesus Christ's death and our identification with Him in His death and His resurrection. And I could see something was bugging him. And after a while, he said, "Yeah, but how do you do it?" I said, "Mike, have you ever seen anyone baptized?" "No." I said, "Do you remember that little deal up behind the pastor Sunday? You remember seeing that?" "No." I said, "Well, Mike, that's what we call a baptistry." And he said, "Well, I want to be baptized, but I don't know how you do it." And he really didn't. He didn't know if you held your nose and ran and jumped in the swimming pool or what. And so I began to spend time with Mike Maxson. I had other things I could be doing, but I knew one thing. That boy needed to grow. And he was going to get some personal follow-up. And so I'd go by his room late at night, and I'd have Bible study with him. I taught him how to have a personal quiet time. I taught him how to memorize verses. He'd go by every Sunday before he'd go to church, he'd stick 3x5 cards in his Bible. And I said, "Now, any time the preacher ever says anything you don't understand, you write questions down." Boy, as soon as that service was over, he'd make a beeline to me. I remember one Sunday the pastor said, mentioned the God of Israel. And he came to me as soon as the service was over and said, "Is that where God was born?" The pastor mentioned, "The cross is the will of God." He said, "What does that mean?" Terms that you and I know, he had not the foggiest idea what they meant. I began to pray for him. I began to spend a lot of time with him. It took a lot of time. But old Mike Maxey began to get the picture. He began to pray for guys on his team. He became a Christian in March. As of right now, there is not a single boy at the University of Oklahoma on the gymnastics team but what knows that Mike Max is a Christian because Mike has told him about it. He came in one day after having come from Chicago to a gymnastics meet, and I said, "Mike, how'd it go?" He said, "Well, great. Said, we got beat, but said I had an hour and a half to talk to my coach about Jesus on the way home." So he began to grow, and he began to witness. And I said, "Now, Mike, you ask God to give you one man on that team who really means business, some guy that you can win, that you can witness to all of them, but, man, let's gear in on one." So he kept telling me about a boy by the name of Rick Carr. Rick was a sophomore in the Big Eight. He was Big Eight champion this year on the trampoline. And this summer he lived with him, and one night Mike went in and woke him up. Rick went in and woke Mike up. He said, "Mike, I've been thinking about it now." And Mike would keep him up talking to him night after night. And that night, Rick Carr invited Christ to come into his life. I was out in the dorms the other night talking to one of the gymnasts, and he said, "Max, you don't have to tell me there's something this God bets that I see it in Rick and Mike." You know, Mike Max has talked to over 100 students since school started. And so I went to a group of students. I began to see how these boys work out 3 hours a day, 7 days a week. The baseball team works out 4 hours a day. And I began to see how most of these boys, wrestling, OU's number one in the nation. They probably will be for some time. And they win the contest the other night, beating one of the top teams in the nation, 25-3. And they win most of them in the last quarter. Because Tommy Evans' idea of wrestling is this: you're to be in better condition than anyone you ever meet. You know, I got to thinking, coming down here with some students, isn't it amazing? They probably have about 10 meets a year. And that boy gets out on that mat and wrestles for 9 minutes. 10 times a year. That is 1.5 hours. And that boy gives his life for 1.5 hours. Actually in the meet. I began to notice some of these things. And so this fall, before school started, I went to 6 boys. That I felt had great potential in the area of evangelism. These fellows wanted to do something. And so I said, "Fellas, I want you to give me every Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 3 to 5. And then I want another hour and a half of your time on Saturday morning, and I want another night of the week on Monday." This little old thing where we try to get people 30 minutes for noonday. And we still have noonday, and we try to get everyone we can. But I began to meet with those boys, and we began to study the life of Paul. And we'd study his life, and when he wrote a book, we'd stop and study that book. And we'd spend at least, usually about 2 to 3 hours a week in doing nothing but praying. God began to do some tremendous things. Out of those 6 boys, 5 of those boys now have someone that they won to Christ since school started. Now they're working with those boys, and as a result of it, these boys are witnessing to others. Now, Pastor, I want to close by basically trying to get over one thing. If we're going to see witnesses, and if we're going to see much happen as a result of the Crusade of the Americas, we cannot wait till the meeting starts in your church. Now, I want to say this, and I've debated on it ever since I've been here. This concerns the Crusade of the Americas. I hope I'm dead wrong when I say this, but I doubt it. In South and Central America, the Crusade of the Americas will be greatly blessed of God. Why? They're out with the people evangelizing right now. They're sowing the seed. In America, in Oklahoma, with few exceptions, it will be one more simultaneous revival unless we begin to sow some seed between now and then. A friend of mine draws it on a chart, and I wish I could do that. We'll draw a long line over here, and we'll say, if this end is when a person's born, and if this end is when he dies. Now, there are quite a few days for most people between the time they're born and they die. But you know what we want to do as Baptists? And this is what I wanted to do at the University of Oklahoma. I wanted to see God win many, many people on that campus. And I began to go out, and I remember one day coming out of the dorm after having spent an hour with a Jewish boy from New York. And he wasn't ready to accept the Lord. He said, Max, I appreciate your coming, though. He said, I've learned some things about Jesus today that I never knew before. And I walked out rather discouraged, and suddenly this verse popped in my mind. Acts 28:23, where Paul was in prison, and said they came to him from morning till evening, and he expounded to them out of the Scriptures of things concerning Jesus. Old Paul didn't win them all in just a matter of 15 minutes either. But you see, at a point on this line, we want this person to accept the Lord. So we want to back up 15 minutes this side of where that's supposed to happen, talk with him, and that happened. Now, if you were farmers, if preachers were farmers, we'd probably starve to death. Because what we would do is go out into the field with a tractor and a planter, and tied on behind the planter would be the combine. Now, I'm aware of the fact that God's already working in some life, but I'm also aware of the fact that many people to whom we're going to have to witness in our day are raised outside of our evangelical churches. And we're going to have to sow some seed, and it's going to take a period of time with some of them. Let me close by saying this. I'm afraid we're fishing in our bathtubs. Now, it's all right if you put some fish in that bathtub. It's fine then to fish in it. You can have wonderful gear, but if you fish in your bathtub, you aren't going to catch much. And I have the sneaking suspicion today, by the way the college students stay away from anything, Sunday school, training, you name it, they stay away. The non-Christian student. We're going to have to begin to move out into our world, which is incidentally what the New Testament Christians did. We have some way separated the New Testament message almost completely from the method. The method was preaching and teaching, but to whom? To the non-Christian. We're not doing very much of that today. And unless we start, God has given Southern Baptists a promise, and it's 2 Corinthians 9:6, and in the context it's applied to finances, but it's one of those great truths that applies to anything. He who sows sparingly will reap sparingly. Now, I'll play the role of a prophet for just 1 minute and tell you this. If you sow sparingly between now and the Crusade of the Americas, you will reap sparingly. That's God's promise. But he who sows bountifully shall reap also bountifully. It's one of our objectives to try to talk to 500 freshmen with a group of these men next semester on our campus. We're going to try to go to 500 of the freshmen on our campus. Pastor, when you go home, ask God to give you one man out of your congregation who's really interested in evangelism. And begin to take him with you. As a friend of mine says, I wouldn't even go to the hospital alone. You can call one of your laymen and say, why don't you come visit? Well, I'm busy. Well, there's a man up here at the hospital dying, but if you can get around to it in the next few hours, I'd like you to go with me. We can train some men. And Jesus trains some men, and Paul trains some men. And if you want to see evangelists in your church, I think the place to start, as well as with the preaching and other things, you've got to do some of it personally. Why did Jesus spend 3 years with his 12? And most commentators say that further he went in the ministry, the more time he spent alone with those 12. Why? He was training them. And I'll tell you one thing, some of the greatest witnesses on our campus have come about as a result of taking them with us to witness. We can make evangelists. When the director of the Billy Graham follow-up team was asked to go to Japan, the Japanese pastor said, we can't get our people to witness. So he got over there and met with them, and he said, what are you doing? They said, we're preaching on it. He said, no wonder they aren't witnessing. Another said, we're holding study calls. No wonder they aren't witnessing. You can't just do it by preaching. He spent 2 weeks in Japan. When he left, there were at least 200 laymen who had won at least two to the Lord, because he spent hours with them and he took them with him. And I believe if we're going to help our young people in our churches, we're going to have to get some people that we can spend some time with, as well as preaching to all the people. Find some that are interested. Spend some time with them. Train them. Train them to help your young people. One last illustration. We were in a dorm one night. A group of us had gone out to witness, and two of the boys, one of the boys had never been before, and he went with one boy who had been sometime, and they got into a little nest of atheists. And at least the boys tried to push this off on them. First thing you know, another one came in the room, and sooner or later they had seven in there, and they couldn't answer all their questions. So they told the boy, said, you know, I can't answer all your questions, but we'd like to come back and bring the BSU director with us, and we'll be happy to talk with you. And they said, all right, that'd be fine. So on a certain night, we had an appointment. They called the Baptist Student Center about 30 minutes earlier. We were meeting to pray. And they called over and said, are you fellas coming tonight? You bet, we'll be there. So we went over, and there were seven of us and 11 of those guys. And we got in a big room, and we started around. I started the first fella, tell him what Jesus has done for you. And we went around and shared our testimonies. After a while, we spent about an hour and a half talking, and one boy says, oh, I said, I don't believe a word of that. I believe Jesus was just a man who came on the scene. He was a pretty sharp old boy. And he just deceived a lot of people. And after a long period of time, there's one boy that hadn't said very much. And we kept talking to him about what Jesus Christ meant to us and what he had done for us and how we believed he was the only way. And after a while, one of the boys said, now wait just a minute. Y'all just all shut up. Every one of you, will you? He said, I want to say something. He said, now you say that Jesus Christ is God's Son and he's the way that people can come to know him. Is that what you said? And I said, yes, sir, that's what I said. He said, I don't think most Christians believe that. And I said, well, apparently some of them don't. And I said, son, let me tell you something. I believe that. That's the reason I'm out here tonight and still home watching television, holding hands with my wife on the couch. I said, I believe Jesus Christ is the only hope you have. And I believe that for all students.